Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
You're inside the eye, live here on the Toracle Broadcasting Network, streaming to you live across the World Wide Web, and coming to you from a Middle Eastern shithole. Again, this is The Fetch, and you're listening to Inside the Eye, live here on Toracle. The cats are active. The cats are all over the place, peeing in the shower, and I don't know where my wife is right now, but it's very cold here, and yeah. So, just to get into a little bit of numerology, I'd just like to let everybody know out there that 1 plus 2 equals Jew. And we're going to go into a lot of numerology today. And
sorry, folks. This is Andrew with the Great White North. I don't know what happened there. I thought I heard Fetch there for a minute. That would be interesting. Haven't heard from him in a long time. No, I'm just screwing with you. What's up, guys? It's Andrew here with the Great White North. How are you? Renegade Broadcasting is the name of the network. My show, The Great White North, is a fill-in at the moment. You know, I've done a couple of the wildcard shows while the guys were away on the road trip. And, that's where we're actually... Shit, that song is still playing in the background. I couldn't find a copy of "Wishing Well" by the Styx on YouTube. I guess they've the Styx don't like people stealing their stuff off of YouTube. Apparently, I don't know, but that's okay. I can't think of any other reason why I would want to listen to that crap. But anyways, guys, the other shows on Oracle at the moment are as follows. Monday is Kyle with the Blitzkrieg broadcast. Tuesday is Wild. Wednesday, we have Dana Antiochus with Imperium Europa. Mike Sledge on Thursday nights with Reconstructions Live. Siegfried does Ragnarok Now on Friday. Saturdays, we have the Round Table. And Sunday right now is filled by Sinead X doing an excellent show about Aryan women, and not just about Aryan women, about all sorts of interesting topics. And it's really great to see or to hear the ladies represented on this network and in the movement in general. I guess I ought to see if you guys could. You can hear me okay in there, I'm assuming, right? Okay, yeah, 1 plus 2 equals Jew, so I'm guessing you can. So that's the lineup right here at this point. The road show came to an end, and it was a great success. as according to the guys and from the videos that I've seen so far, it looks like they had a blast, and I just can't wait for that documentary. Although I have done a little bit of video editing, and I know how time-consuming it can be, so I'm sure Kyle's got his work cut out for him. I don't know how he finds the time with all this stuff that he does. I really don't know where he gets the energy, but kudos to him, and cheers to the road show. Cheers to all of you. I'm drinking a Sleeman's Dark here. So. Okay, yeah, again, you are inside the igloo live with the Great White North. I'm your host, Andrew, here on Renegade. I kind of threw the show together in the past hour. I didn't know that I'd be doing the show tonight. I always figured that someone's going to snap up these wild card slots. I'm really surprised that we're not hearing from more different hosts. I see that we've got quite a few people in the chat room. I don't know if that's owed to Kyle's show last night with Horace the Avenger, but that was an awesome show. And a lot of interesting stuff brought up. And I don't know, I just find it funny when, you know, Horace would say, would, you know, talk about aliens or, you know, talk about something that I'd never even heard of or in my life, and then be like, and yada, 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 you know the rest. And I'm like, no, I don't know the rest about that. But anyways, some really interesting stuff. So if that's, the chat room numbers there are in owing to people who've come over from White Rabbit, you're all very welcome here at Renegade. Just so that you guys know, every Tuesday night, we have a wild card slot, which means that listeners who feel like they want to step up and do a show, you can do so here on Renegade. So, yeah. Oh, okay. According to the chat, most of the people in here are trolls. Well, that's not surprising. I mean, about half the people in here are usually trolls anyway, but whatever, you know. Trolls gonna troll. Anyways, so yeah, there's been a lot of really great talk recently on Renegade. I love the attitude now. Everything seems to be shifting to a much more positive attitude, and we've got a lot of forward momentum here. And as you know, objects in motion tend to want to stay in motion. So let's not, let's not lose our momentum. Let's keep moving onward and upward with our struggle here. Today on the show, I've got another really, really great thing that Kyle and Dana brought up was Renegade Records, and I just got a big smile on my face when I heard that. I think that's I can't think of a better idea than that, really. Yeah, maybe we could get Truther G on that label. get Truther G to cut a few more tracks. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure there's a lot of really talented musicians out there that are also Renegade listeners. And, you know, if that ever comes to fruition, I'd love to hear what people out there have to offer. I'm sorry, guys, by the way, that, my shows tend to seem disjointed. They're very news oriented, and I know that a lot of people are like, I don't want to hear about what they're doing to us, and I want to hear more esoteric type stuff, and I know people want more exciting type discussions than what I have to offer with regards to history, esoteric stuff, and philosophy, and all that. I find it fascinating, by the way. Just because I don't talk about it all that much doesn't mean I don't, but I'm really not in a position to tell you guys about that kind of stuff. Most of you probably know way more about it than I do anyways. Anyways, we've got a few different, I was able to put together a little bit of a lineup here, or a little bit of a outline here, so hopefully it will carry us through. We have a call-in line. It's 347-633-9657. I'd love to hear from you all. Actually, we have a call already on the line, 423. How you doing, Jim?
I was just listening. I might call back later if I have any questions, okay?
Yeah. That's okay. Hey Jim. I loved your battle song of freedom there that you gave us a live rendition of. Thanks very much for that.
I'd
read it when you posted it up on the Tribune, but it kind of lends a little more weight to it when you hear how it was meant to be sung, you know. So anyway,
yeah,
thanks.
I'm glad you liked it. I really am. Did you happen to hear my last post?
I haven't been on the Tribune in a couple of days. So if it's very recent, then no, I've just been really busy with work lately. But do you have a new article up over there?
Well, it's a march. I like the Horst Wessel song, the March of the Triumphs. I can't even remember the March of the. Triumphant Aryan Reich. It's very powerful, and I'd like you to listen to it and tell me what you think of it.
Hey,
get the music to the lyrics, but I haven't been able to do that yet. Somebody could
yeah.
YouTube or something.
Oh, I could almost hear like the battle band with the flutes playing along with that, with the snares and like a male choir singing in the background. Anyways. Yeah,
very powerful song.
Yeah, good stuff, Jim.
What are you putting me on mute for a while and then I'll press the one if I have something to say. How would that be?
No problem at all. I know how to bring you on now, so I won't keep you on hold if you need to come up. So talk to you soon. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that was Jim. And, he's a very active listener here at Renegade. Really good guy. But what he was talking about was, I guess he's posted something else up over at Renegade Tribune. So for those of you who don't know, Renegade Broadcasting also has another site that Kyle's put up called Renegade Tribune. That's where the Renegade community can go and register as a writer and create their own works, their own written works. It doesn't just have to be articles or essays. It can be like... what Jim has posted, it could be a song, it could be a poem, get creative, guys, get registered and get writing. Right at the top of my outline for today is the word wiggers, and I think that's an important topic. Not a lot of people tell, people mention it in passing and about how, I hate wiggers and I do hate wiggers and I think you all should too. I mean, but nobody ever really wants to talk too much about it. What makes a wigger? There's all sorts of, I guess, reasons why people are going to become a wigger, but at the core of it is self-deprivation, is no sense of self whatsoever. When you take a hollow, empty person and they're walking around and, they have no sense of self and no culture that they care about, and then they turn on the TV and they see these powerful groids flashing stacks of money and getting bitches and all that shit, they're coming from a position of power. So right away, these guys are turned on by that. Probably a lot of them in a sexual way, but, they're drawn to that sense of power, and they find that in any of the white people that are promoted in our Jewish media. And actually, there aren't really that many reasons why someone becomes a wigger. That's probably the core of it right there. And I mean, like I've said in my first broadcast, I used to be really into rap. And mind you, I never spoke. I never tried to put on, you know the way that they talk. I'm not even gonna, you know, like yo man. You know, I've never tried to talk like that. And whenever I encountered a white person that spoke like that, even though I was into rap, I wasn't even too enthused to talk to them. You know, it just infuriates me. And you know, I look through my hard drives now, which I have all my music on, and I see all of these. I see it's about half rap. You know, I've only you know, in the past year or so, you know, really stopped listening to it all entirely and focused on, you know, white music, which has broadened my horizons like you would not believe. But yeah, I'm still in the process of getting rid of all of it. You know, I have terabytes of rap music. I have instrumentals, acapellas. Like, I would make mixes, and you know, I knew all the members of the different bands, or I don't even call them bands. They're not bands. They're just groids shouting into a mic. You know, one of them that really comes to mind, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention it right now, is a group called Dead Prez. And they were always my one of my favorite groups anyway, Dead Prez. It was a group of two guys. And they have this one particular song. And I was always trying to get the full version of it. It was hard to get. And it said, and one of the lyrics went, "And it just won't stop until we get the bleep off the block." Okay. And then when I finally found out what the actual lyrics were, it was crackers. So so basically it was, "And it just won't stop until we get these crackers off the block." So what won't stop? You know, tea time? The violence, you know, the violence, the shootings, the insanity just won't stop until we've driven these crackers out of our neighborhood, is the gist of that song. And you know, and this is what I listened to, and this is what I thought was normal. It's just I can't. But you know, and they push this whole red, gold, and green, like Africa repatriation thing, but they're not even into repatriation, like going back or return, the right to return and all that stuff. They're just, you know, they just rap about being a thug they have a whole song where they talk about, you know, getting a fake ID so you can get government benefits. And, you know, like, how can you rap and sound like a thug when you're talking about how to get food stamps and shit like that? I just don't understand it. You know? And anyways, it's craziness. You know, this one particular group just always got kind of stuck in my because then they kind of, in some of their songs, they're promoting vegetarianism and stuff like that. And I'm like, wow, you know, these guys are all over the map. What the hell are they doing? You know, like, what are you saying here? You know, they don't even know what they're saying. They're just, you know, along for the ride, is my opinion. But then you've got other rappers, like you've got Ice Cube, right? Ice Cube now, who's on CSI Delaware, one of those freaking Law and Order type shows. I think that guy's like 60 years old now, or maybe, no, that's Ice-T. Ice-T is a little older than Ice Cube, I guess. Ice Cube had an album called Lethal Injection, and on one of them, one of the tracks on Lethal Injection was called Cave Bitch, and I'm just going to try a second here if I could pull up Cave Bitch. It's absolutely disgusting. Okay, here we go. Yeah, right at the first result here. But it starts off with a little, you know, little speech. Okay. Yeah. The intro is by Dr. Khalid Muhammad. Okay. So here. Give me a black goddess sister. I can't resist her. No stringy-haired, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pale-skinned, buttermilk complexion, grafted, recessive, depressive, ironing board backside, straight up and straight down, no frills, no thrills, miss 6 o'clock, subject to have the itch, mutanoid, caucasoid, white cave bitch. Okay, that's just the intro. And you know, I'm not gonna read you the rest of it. It's just absolutely disgusting. I mean, this whole thing. Well, you know what? I guess the message at its core is that, you know, black guys should date black women, and which I totally agree with. But the way that it just totally tries to make white women out to be the most disgusting thing on the face of the planet. Well, Ice Cube, if they're so disgusting, maybe you could explain why it is that every black athlete and like every black person of man of prominence seems to have a white one on his arm. Born again Aryan says dead breath is black nationalist. Yeah, they're black nationalists, but not for returning to Africa, which they seem to. Presenting Africa, you know. So I'm not going to get too much into the destructive nature of rap. I'm sure you all know about that already. Oh, I think I see you're beside Jim's name. I don't know if that means he wants to come back on. Jim, did you want to come back on, or do I have the
wrong... Yeah, I'd like to make some comments on what you're talking about, the music, you know. I see the Jews do that on purpose so they can destroy... you know, the moral fiber of the white race. They've done that all along. I mean, they promoted jazz, you know, back in the 20s and 30s, and then, you know, rock and roll. See, these are all black music, and they're all essentially focusing on the lower. You understand, like, the system, like the chakras, and then, you know, the yoga system with the chakras, you know, the lower chakras, in other words, rather than the higher chakras. Whereas in your classical music, they focus on the higher chakra, the heart chakra, the throat chakra, and you see, so that's another
and the
way.
Rap, the bass stimulates the lower chakras. Is that what you're saying? Or?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, the black music, because it's really not music at all. It's just essentially, if you could look back in Africa, it was just like they had these sex orgies, and that's where this black music comes from. It's just totally lower in the lower elements, and... they do that. The Jews do that on purpose, of course, so they can destroy the white
definitely,
race.
Definitely by design.
Yeah. So I think the thing is we need to develop our own music, but I don't think it should be based at all on rock and roll, of course, especially not rap or even jazz. But I mean, I know some of the white music now is sort of, it seems like it's sort of a mixture. I mean, you have the white positive elements, and then you have the negative black elements, and I don't think we should have that. I think it should be, I mean, if you listen to the music from the Third Reich, like these marching songs, they're just so powerful. And
big band is also great, and like a lot of the swing type music, you know, a lot of the older music is excellent. You know, you listen to it now and you're like, wow, even stuff, you know, that's come out the past 20, 30 years doesn't compare to this.
No, it's gotten worse. Every decade, the music has gotten worse and worse because the Jews, of course, have had more and more control over the music industry. I mean, I don't think there's hardly any white people anymore who are you know, in charge of any musical companies or anything. I think I remember when I was a kid back in the 1950s, especially the early 1950s. You know, you had like this hip parade, and you had some pretty decent songs. You know, and they were elevating, you know, and then around, I think it was in the 50s, this guy Alan Freed, this Jew, Alan Freed up from Cleveland, he started introducing, you know, rock and roll, and then eventually, of course, Elvis Presley, you know, who was essentially, he gyrate like a Negro, you see, and of course, you know, it's very popular, but I mean, that, in other words, it's a very subtle thing, you see, people don't realize that they're being brought down, but
it's but gradual, I mean, it started off. The lyrics were about people falling in love and getting married and having children and a home together. That was cool. And then it slowly moved eliminated all of those things and just replaced them with what we see today, which is basically just have sex with anything that moves, black people are cool, white people suck, and, you know, that's basically the gist of it, you know? And then you're totally right, especially when you come to talk about stuff like rap, Def Jam and, you know, all these labels that were started by Jews, you know, the entire industry was Jewish. And, you know, you can't necessarily say that Jews wrote the stuff, but they definitely promoted the people who wrote the stuff they wanted to promote, you know, that they wanted to promote to us. So definitely, yeah.
I can't think of anything that the Jews promote that's not destructive to our race. I mean, I don't care what it is. I mean, I've never come across anything positive yet that the Jews have ever done. I mean, have you? I'm still
no, nothing with stuff. any redeeming value whatsoever. And I remember, you know, that one of the first rap tapes that I bought when I was a kid was by the Beastie Boys. And I'm like, oh, these guys are cool. I don't know, Jim. You probably don't know who the Beastie Boys are. They're three
my kids. I have kids about 5 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good. Good. So you probably know, they're three Jewish white boys, or like, sorry people, three Jews from New York who just exploded onto the rap scene, and everybody was like, oh, these guys are prodigies, you know? They're, one of them is dead now, and they're definitely the Beastie Men, not the boys anymore, but I remember that album was just filled with, just the word, like, you know, fight for your right to party and stuff like that. You could say what you want about that, but every song had something about shooting somebody in the face or something like that. And I'd have to listen to it all, like, quietly sitting, like, up close to my stereo so my parents wouldn't hear. But, you know, my dad did hear, and he came in the room, and he's like, what are you listening to? And I'm like, oh, Dad, you're so lame, you know? And he's like, yeah, but they're talking about shooting people in the face. Do you think that's cool? And I'm like, oh, Dad, it's just music, you know? And then, but, hey, he was right, you know? It's trash.
Look what they do, how these people die, these rock stars of the 60s, like Janis Joplin, and, I mean, so many of them
died. Jimi Hendrix. Yeah.
Look at Elvis Presley, how he died, you know? So, I mean, the whole thing, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, they all essentially go together. And it's sex that's detached from love. You see, now, love and sex are beautiful if they go together. But, I mean, when you detach it and sex just becomes the aim of itself and your rock music is just nothing but, you know, animal gyrations, well, I mean, how can you create a high culture in that? That's why in National Socialist Germany, even in the Soviet Union, under Stalin, they discouraged jazz music. You see, because even the atheistic communists, they understood that's the quickest way to bring a country down is to generate the generation of its youth, and you do that through promotion of degenerate music, degenerate art, you know, degenerate everything. You know?
Degenerate everything, exactly. It's an all-encompassing degeneracy.
You know?
Yeah,
it's just we're living in a time of total degeneracy in this country. I mean, like homosexual marriage. I mean, can you believe it? 50 years ago, people would say you were crazy if you thought that would ever happen.
10 years ago, Jim. Like my parents, who are Catholic, were staunchly opposed to not just homosexual marriage, homosexuality in general. They thought it was, an abhorrence. They hated it. And then just the other day, you know, I'm talking to them, and they're like, oh, you know, it's not that bad. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, where do you get that from? And they're like, oh, well, you know, they say that it's all right at the church now. And I'm like, so the church says it's okay, you know, and it's not just that. I know, you know, they're glued to the TV every night, and they read the newspaper in the morning, and they listen to the BS talk radio, you know, the talking heads on the radio. So you know, it's just amazing how in a decade their outlook on it has flipped 180 degrees, you know, and they're not even able to pinpoint to me the exact reasons why they feel that way. It's just they've been told so much that they're like, nope, this is the way it is now. Unreal.
But you won't realize that the Jews control the media and that they have an agenda. And so many people, and they see, we have the internet now, and this is our salvation. It's like talk shows like you have, and I think other Renegade, and these other shows. I mean, you got so much stuff and so much truth out there, but people would rather go on there and play little video games and stuff rather than listen to the truth. They still get their news on the Jews media, Fox News and CNN, totally brainwashed. But we have the internet now, and that's the thing. We didn't have that, even 20 years ago.
But
Jim,
if I could just for one second. I agree with you completely, and that's the, when I'm looking for my news, I've got a bunch of different news feeds, and then, I tried to read, at least a couple of different articles on the same topic, and then try to formulate my opinion. That's really the only way that you're going to, get a somewhat true view of what's going on in the world, But my parents in particular and the older generation thinks that I'm uninformed because my information comes from the internet, Yet, if you turn around and you look at the news feeds for the newspapers, for the television, and for the radio, they all come through the internet. They think that there's still some ticker tape machine or something, or reporters are mailing stories back and forth. No, it's all about the internet now, and you guys are just, my folks anyway are stuck in this archaic form of media that's, totally controlled, and they're just totally, unwilling to admit that, even though they know it. They know the families locally, in their area that own their newspapers and stuff, and they know that they're Jewish, but they would never even consider the thought that somebody would actually, manipulate the news for nefarious reasons. Oh, my God, no way, So,
they couldn't conceive of how the government, was complicit in 9/11. We know that was an inside job. We know it was a Mossad CIA operation, false flag operation, and yet people just cannot conceive. They're in denial. It's cognitive dissonance. They cannot conceive that the government could ever be that evil as to sacrifice 3,000 of its own citizens in a horrible way just to get us involved in these damned wars for Israel. But that's what they've done. And how are we going to break through that? Because we have to break through somehow and get people to see the truth.
It's a tall order, Jim. That's kind of what we're trying to do with Renegade here. Get the word out. And I think you're really doing your part. I heard that you've been helping out Dana recently with a nice little library collection, and you're.
I want him to have, I'm getting older now, and none of my relatives are really into this, what I'm into, so I'm afraid when I die, they're going to take my books and probably just dump them, because no one else is, I don't get any support from my family, and Dana has so much potential. The guy's a brilliant guy.
He is, man.
Huh?
I should say thank you for that, because I'm probably going to end up, listening to some readings from those books that he'll do on his show, so... Hey, Jim, and isn't that, what you just said really hit home for me, because, that's probably one of the saddest things is the fact that you can't even get your own family on board with you, Kind of makes me feel like if I was ever to say, go to jail for saying something I shouldn't say, that maybe my own family wouldn't even be on my side. Maybe they'd be like, he shouldn't have said that, It's hard when you can't even get the people closest to you on board. But I brought a friend, my best friend of, 20 years, I've just brought on board. And he's totally on board with them and totally on message. And it's, now when we get together, we have the greatest conversations. Before we didn't, we would, play a video game, watch a movie or something like that. And now we actually, have good discussions. And that's important. And my wife as well.
Is this something just recently
Sorry?
Where the Jewish problem, is this recent with you, or has it been an ongoing thing for quite a few years, or?
2009, I think, was when I finally came out of, and then about, 2007 to 2008, I was on the Zionist Israeli, thing, but I still thought there was other elements to it, you can't just blame one group, and then... Yeah, there's only so long you can swim around in this information, before you realize what's up,
I didn't start waking up till I was in my early 50s. I was a liberal most of my life. And when I finally woke up and I realized how I'd been brainwashed and duped, this was infuriating me to think that they could have done this. You know, and it was such a, I mean, I believe in the Holocaust. I believe that Hitler was an evil man and, National Socialism was a terrible, terrible lie. You know, it's like everything they said about Hitler was a lie. Everything they said about National Socialism was a lie. I mean, it's like everything.
Yeah.
Everything is true.
It's the opposite. You flip everything. It's a mirror image of what it should be. You know what I mean? Hey, Jim, we've got...
We got another caller
on the line. Well, you can stay on if you want, but
I think I'll get off and I'll just listen to it. I'm at work and I'm calling from my cell phone. That's why I don't have my computer. But I'll go and turn my computer on and get off work and I'll listen to the rest of the program.
Okay, so put you on hold or hang up on you?
I'll just hang up now and I'll listen to the rest of the program when I get home. I'm on my computer.
Thanks very much for your call, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye.
Okay. Next up, we got a 608 number, 608. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling
from?
Hello.
Hey, Andrew. This is James in Wisconsin.
James, what's going on, man?
Hey. Yeah, it's good to talk to you. Good to hear from Jim.
For sure.
I can identify kind of where he's coming from because I used to be sort of a liberal as well.
Me too.
And it's,
yeah.
I don't regret it. I'm just glad I've moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Just part of the journey, I guess. But
just look at the guys that didn't move on. You know what I mean? That with their adopted groid babies and oatmeal Birkenstocks. I mean, like,
well,
they look like the most miserable people in the world.
Yeah, and I heard someone say recently, I forget who it was. I think it was on Renegade that a lot of these liberal types are some of the most insane people you'll meet. Really.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I met one in the course of my business a couple weeks ago, and it's like he had these two beautiful young daughters, you know, who were maybe, I guess, between the ages of 8 and 10. And then he had, an adopted groid son who looked to be about 14. And I'm like, what are you doing bringing this, what are you doing, you know? But he arrives at his house, you know, he's got a car in the garage, but of course he takes his bike because he's saving the world, you know, and he's talking with his wife about, you know, their, what they're going to have for dinner and stuff like that. But it's just so, like, I don't know, everything about this guy just rubbed me the wrong way, you know. It's like he's the kind of guy that buys into all of that left-wing bullshit.
Yeah. And where I'm living now, there's an enclave of mostly white folks who are fairly wealthy who have their kids in a Waldorf school, and it's about, you know, $7,000 a year for tuition, maybe even more. It's an elementary through high school, and, you know, based on the teachings of Rudolf Steiner and whatnot. But these kids at some point are being taught Hebrew, and it's been that whole system. I don't know a lot about it. I don't have a lot of experience with it, but it seems like that Steinerian education, whatever it is now, it's kind of a money funnel. And it's a lot of these kids that come out of it aren't very powerful in a lot of ways, and they're just kind of left with no real direction for life. They're just kind of partying and doing lots of drugs, and, you know, just everything's beautiful, you know, it's all for the moment and that kind of shit.
Yeah. YOLO, you know, I hate that freaking acronym, like, more than anything. But I think we have something similar here around where I am. I think it's called Montessori, but I'm not sure if they teach Hebrew, but it's the same sort of, you know, it's got elementary, junior high, and high school all kind of rolled into one, and kind of an open learning
Montessori
sort of thing.
Montessori is different. It's not based on anything from Rudolf Steiner, I know that much, but yeah, there's one of those here too, and it's real, like, activity-based education. They learn a lot through It's a lot different. It's hands-on. I don't know much about it, but
yeah,
it's not the same as the Waldorf. I know that.
Yeah. Well, that's good, man. That's interesting, man, because, you know, my wife and I right now are trying to figure out what we're going to do as far as schooling goes when our baby gets to be that age, you know. And thankfully, there's a good network of homeschoolers here, you know, in this province and in most provinces in Canada, actually. But and the only thing I like about that is the fact that then you can go around and you can actually meet these people who are and ask to see the curriculum. You know what I mean? That's really the only way you're going to know whether or not it's their teachings are in line with what you want. But mine are probably a little extreme. You know, I'm just going to have to find one that's, the least Marxist.
Yeah, and there is no curriculum that's been designed for where we're coming from, you know. So it's
no doubt.
I think it's something that if it needs to be committed to paper, it's going to be us that has to do it, or else just pass it on to our children, you know. Because I dropped out of high school after ninth grade because I had the option. And, you know, my mother, who was my sole parent at the time, pushed for this correspondence school, which is basically, it was called Keystone National High School. And it was the exact same curriculum, the exact same textbooks I would have gotten in public school, but I was just, it was all, you know, it's self-driven. You just do it at home and do the test yourself, and you have the answers in the back of the book. And I didn't do any of that because that was the exact reason I dropped out of school, was because I thought the curriculum was bullshit and, you know, didn't do my homework. I got poor grades. So what was even the point of being there?
Yeah. Hey, you pretty much sum up my sentiments during high school right there. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I always had that programming going on. Got to do well. Got to go to a good college. Got to get a good job. You know, got to be a doctor or a lawyer, or you're not going to be nothing.
Yep.
Anyways, yeah, I loved your show the other day on pornography, man. And my wife is
listening to that right now,
actually.
Oh, that was Jason. I think his name is Jason.
Oh, shit. Oh, it's sorry, you're James.
Yep.
Okay, sorry, man. I got you mixed up with Jason there. But, yeah, no, you did.
No,
you
I
did
agree.
A,
that was a,
a
great show. Great show.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like gradual retardation. You know, watching pornography in the long term, it's eventually going to turn you into a complete social retard and dangerous. It's dangerous.
Oh, absolutely, I agree.
Brains.
It definitely changes the brain chemistry, and it's only a slippery slope to neurosis. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was, it's not so much, one of the things that I wish he talked about is the fact that it's not, when I was growing up, it was a tape, you know, somebody would have a tape and, they bring it to somebody's house or something like that and be like, oh my God, who's got the tape? It was just a tape. There was never, you go to any one console that's around you and boom, it's right there at your fingertips. You know, it's a completely different arena now. You know, it's accessible. It's amazing how accessible it is, and just the degenerate, disgusting kinds of, like, there's something out there for everybody. You know, if amputees are what you're into, then you'll find it. You know, it's just absolutely disgusting. But James, I'm going to, I was going to throw on a song and take a quick break here. Did you want to hold on?
Yeah, sounds good. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Cool. All right, guys, this is Berserker Gang by Svartsoth. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
All right, guys, that was Svartzot with the Berserker Gang. I'm speaking with James here. James, are you still there?
Yes.
What's going on
here?
Yeah, they're a pretty funny group.
What's that? Ahead.
No, I was just saying, man, that delay is annoying, eh? As soon as I stop speaking, you start, and that's the way it goes on Blog Talk here. It's all flash-based, so, like, you have to wait of a second before anything actually happens. But, yeah, that group, Svartzot, I was watching one of their live shows on YouTube, and I'm sure you all hear the flute that they have in there. The guy that plays the flute is like this 6'5" guy with a giant, like, reddish blonde beard and hair down to his ass and all these tattoos, and he's shirtless playing this tiny little flute, banging his head. It's awesome. But, yeah, they're pretty good groups. S-V-A-R-T-S-O-T. I think they're German, but I'm not 100% sure.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like, folk metal and a lot of different metal, really.
Yeah, you were the one who requested that they play Slaves of Fear
Slaves
on
of
here.
Fear.
Yeah.
That's right,
I'd say that's probably my favorite Amon Amarth track. I'm a lot more into their anti-religious music than I am their pagan stuff, yeah, it's a great track.
Very,
good band.
Very unfamiliar with a lot of their work, but I just, got one of their albums, and that track really stuck out to me.
Surtur, right? Is that the one that's
yeah.
off? Or? Okay. Yeah, hey, actually, as far as Amon Amarth, frontman Johan Hegg, is apparently cast in this new Viking movie, so I'll be waiting to see see if he's able to act as well as he can growl, But that should be interesting.
Huh.
I really into, as far as melodic type stuff, technical death metal, and a lot of it is a little too hokey for me. I mean, I don't really like melodic singing mixed in with metal. I want to hear someone singing nicely. I'll go listen to something acoustic. I want to hear someone growling, but that's just me. But I've found out about so many amazing groups.
Ways, but
yeah.
Your connection's
really
kind of going to crap there. You're breaking up quite a bit.
Oh, shit. I mean, I don't really know what I can do to fix that. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Is it still breaking up? Or?
It sounds okay right now.
Okay. Well, keep me posted, man. I mean, I don't really know what I can do here. I don't really want to sign out of the studio or anything because I'm not sure if I'll be able to navigate my way back in, but...
Oh, you're pretty... It sounds good right now, so...
Okay, good. Yeah, I whenever I'm doing a show, I plug, like, a hardwire in, like, directly out of my modem, so I'm trying to avoid it. Like, none of it is wireless, that's for sure. I'm trying to eliminate as many things that can go wrong as possible, but so yeah. I've found out about a ton of great music, even just in the past couple of months, there's this really amazing group that I recommend anybody who likes the kind of heathen metal or whatever you want to call it. They're called Asenblut, A-S-E-N-B-L-U-T, and they're a German thrash metal band. And, I can't really understand a lot of their lyrics, but they are fucking awesome. There's some bands where it's like you just listen to them and right away
that they have the formula that you want to hear, you know? And, yeah, so there's them, and then there's Nordheim and Haugadom, and I mean, even black metal I've gotten really into recently. I find that it's some of the most artistic music that I've ever heard. The albums just flow together so, like all the tracks on one album, you could just sit there and listen to the whole thing. And it's not just all, you know, when I say black metal, some people think that it's just nonstop pounding on a guitar and screaming and stuff. It's really not about that at all. You know, it's a, you know, Hate Forest, and there's well, there's a lot of other groups out there, but Hate Forest right now is the one that I listen to the most as far as black metal goes. What do you listen to, James?
Well, I probably know of a lot fewer bands than you do, but you know, I like the, as you were talking about, I actually kind of like the melodic aspect to some metal, but I like the, you know, the mix of the two, the growly and, but let's see. Well, you know, I've listened to some Burzum. I like Burzum for sure.
You ever heard of Opeth?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Creator, and I was just thinking about, like, I find it interesting, like, how metal appeals to me in kind of the same way that a lot of classical music does. And it's a lot about power and just the power of the emotion coming through the music.
Mm, definitely. It's not vapid like this freaking, like rap, you know, or like these pop songs coming out today. There's no substance at all to it. It's not that there's no anger or there's no happiness or, you know, there's no extreme emotion. It's like it's made for someone on Ritalin music these days, you know.
It's three or four notes repeated over and over in slight variation. Mm. And
with an electronic beat in the back. Well, the whole song is electronic these days. Even the voices, you know, like, and even these people who are promoted as being, you know, amazing singers and performers. You know, I just heard the other day they'd scrubbed a track from a Britney Spears concert or something like that, taken out the backing track, which apparently they play way louder than her voice. So all you hear is her. This person would get booed out of a karaoke parlor, like, by a bunch of drunk people, you know? Like, it's awful, you know? That's why, you know, I listen to some groups like the Cranberries and stuff like that, and I hear this beautiful woman's, you know, this woman's amazing voice and the fact that she's playing guitar while she's singing, and I couldn't do either of those things as good as she does both at the same time. And then I look at the, you know, talentless whores that are promoted these days, and I'm like, you know, they collectively they don't have as much talent as this, you know, as this one girl from the Cranberries that I can think of at the moment had back then. But
I think what we see today, like these Britney Spears, they could only exist after the amount of programming and conditioning that's gone on. Like, it took the Beatles to get to Britney Spears.
It's an interesting way to look at it.
And even before that.
Yeah.
Because somebody like Britney Spears.
When I first saw the video for Oops, I Did It Again, or whatever her first one is, and I'm like, this is bad. We're in trouble here. That was my first thought.
Yeah. If there weren't enough pedophiles already, there,
Have you ever seen that thing where it's like
a bunch more,
where they play it backwards or something, and she's saying, "I'm not too young," you know? Have you ever heard?
No.
I think it was a YouTube video or something where they play it backwards, and basically it comes out as, you know, "I'm not too young," "I'm not too young," over and over again. I'm like, that's bad. But yeah.
No, I hadn't heard that.
Anyways, yeah. Well, yeah, music's a really powerful thing, man. And that's another, you know, Wagner I listen to quite a bit, but also
Strauss and Bach and Beethoven, and yeah, I love classical, you know. And then when I put that on, if my wife and I are just hanging out here on a Sunday or something, and you know, putting around doing stuff, it's it creates you know, kind of an atmosphere that you just don't get with any other kind of music. You know, it really makes me feel good, you know, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it, but I definitely, you know, feel more constructive. I feel more creative and just happy in general, you know?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah, I think a lot of, part of it has to do, maybe a lot of it has to do with the fact that these are acoustic instruments that aren't really being electrically amplified, and it's mostly preserving the natural waveforms of those sounds on the recording as opposed to digital music, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, even black metal, they kind of have a sort of one-off mentality when it comes, like a minimalist sort of production mentality. So while they are playing an electrified guitar and bass in a lot of the songs, it still has this kind of raw, unproduced sort of element to it that I like. But you're right, you know, there's something to be said about actually listening to the instrument itself. And you know, I hear a lot of people still make the argument that records are better than CDs and better than listening to them digitally, and I think in a way they might have something, because that's the actual vibration that you're listening to that was originally created by that musician, right, on that record.
Right.
Where it hasn't been reduced to the ones and the zeros in the digital realm.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've looked at a waveform, like a visual representation of a sound, but you can have sine waves, which are rounded peaks and valleys.
And square, yeah.
Square waves, yeah, which are just hard right angles. So in those right angles, you're losing whatever quality is there.
Yeah, that's right. I never thought of it like that. But yeah, you're losing the transitions, you know what I mean? You're losing everything to do with the transition. Interesting. But yeah, I mean, I kind of can see where people are coming from. And it's not just, I don't know how it is with a lot of people, but I download everything, you know, and even when I actually do buy a piece of music to support an artist, I buy it through iTunes. But, I mean, it's been a decade at least since I've walked into a CD store and purchased a CD or, you know, a tape before that. And I kind of miss it, you know. I kind of miss having something that the band wanted you to have along with it, like a booklet, you know what I mean? You don't really have that anymore, but maybe in a way it's good, because then the music speaks more for itself, you know? It's less about the packaging as it is about the music, you know? But
yeah. No, I agree. I'm not a vinyl person. I can't afford to be.
Yeah, you gotta be one of these. You gotta have money anyway. Last vinyl I saw, it was like $40 or something like that. Like, I can't afford $40 an album. The amount of music I listen to and go, you know, I thank God for the internet, or thank the gods, or whatever. You know, it's really allowed me to listen to a whole lot of stuff that I probably never would have got a chance to. Were it not for Napster and such, you know. Anyways, yeah, so what is it here? I was going to talk a little bit about this Free Dominion case here with Richard Warman. I don't know if you wanted to just stay on the line, James, and maybe chime
in.
Yeah,
I haven't heard of that, so yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so guys, I'd alluded before about how this guy out of Ottawa in Canada named Richard Warman had brought charges up against the people who run this website known as Free Dominion. So I'd just like to to read the just so that you guys know, I mean, you're not going to be surprised about this, but none of the mainstream news sources covered this case at all. So I'll be reading from Stormfront here, where Paul Fromm, who I spoke about before, wrote an article about the case, okay? It's already been heard, and it's over, okay? So the title is Free Dominion 4, Huge Defeat for Freedom of Speech in Canada. The bottom line is that after a very costly and valiant six-year battle, the Free Dominion 4, Free Dominion website owners Mark and Connie Fournier, and bloggers Jason Bertucci and Roger Smith this week lost the defamation action brought against them by Richard Warman. The past 6 years have been filled with motions and appeals and procedure on the way to trial. The Fournier's still face two more libel actions launched by Richard Warman, a civil servant with the Department of National Defense, with seemingly an amazing amount of time on his hands for legal complaints, human rights complaints, tribunals, and lawsuits. The crimes of Free Dominion 4, critical comments over several years about Richard Warman, usually his role of, and in this proxy, anti-freedom environment, we must be careful, seeking to limit the freedom of expression of others. Canadian libel law is very hazy. Remarks that lower a person's reputation, thus almost any criticism, can be seen as defamatory. However, truth and fair comment are defenses. The jury in Free Dominion 4 case seemed unwilling to recognize truth or fair comment in numerous postings by the four about which Warman had complained. Here, U.S. Attorney Sam Dixon offers some sober counsel. Juries want to do the nice thing and be pop. They will often ignore facts if the defendants have been cast in a bad light. The defense painted the defendants as extremists with unpopular, maybe even unusual views, and eccentric or opinionated friends or associates. Ottawa is a very politically correct town with a very cozy judiciary, as more than one lawyer has told me. The Free Dominion Four were clearly odd outsiders, unenlightened yokels from the sticks, or the ROC, which is the backward rest of Canada for to the entitled Ottawa mindset, whatever the hell that means. The plaintiff, Richard Warman, savors his victory. So this is a quote from Richard Warman. The jury found all four defendants had been motivated by malice in their attacks against me and awarded $42,000 in damages, broken down in the following amounts. Connie Fournier, $7,000 for general damages, $4,000 for aggravated, $8,000 for punitive. Mark Fournier, $4,000 general, $3,000 aggravated, $5,000 punitive. And Jason Bertucci and Roger Smith both racked up about $11,000 collectively between them in damages. So, but $42,000 out of pocket, in addition to their own legal fees, not the end of damage. Continuing the quote from Richard Warman, an injunction is being sought and costs remain to be ruled on by Justice Robert Smith, who presided over the trial, writes Warman. What exactly would such an injunction mean? We don't know the wording, but the delightfully diabolical thing about an injunction is that breaking it, even inadvertently, could mean a quick trip to prison for the poor victim, impertinent to believe he should open his mouth and speak his mind. So I would just like to read, he included another, Paul also included another small article here by Tom Kennedy. And I would really like to read one portion of it that has to do with the exact law that was cited, because it pertains to Ernst Zundel. Okay. is it? Okay, well, here it is. Okay. Okay, he says, permit me to draw attention to the infamous statement from the Zundel hearing in Toronto, Ontario, Canada in the 1990s, wherein Commissioner Pensa, that's the Canadian Human Rights Commission Commissioner, Pensa, is quoted as saying the following, quote, "It is the finding of this tribunal that truth is not an issue before us. Parliament has spoken. The use of telephone messages for purposes prohibited by Section 13 of the Act cannot be justified by asserting that such messages are truthful. The sole issue is whether such communications are likely to expose a person or persons to hatred or contempt." Yeah. I read that a while ago. Just let me read the first sentence there again. "It is the finding of this tribunal that truth is not an issue before us." And do I need to really read anything more there? I don't think so. Yeah, I'm sure, James, you're familiar with the Zundel case, right?
Yeah, generally. I don't know the specifics, but I know that he is still in prison, I believe.
No, he's been released, but I believe he's under permanent house arrest back in Germany now. But our legal system really went through the ringers. But I think it was interesting that they cited that quote from the Human Rights Commission. You know.
Well, I think you nailed it. I mean, you nailed it. The fact that they said truth is not at issue. Yeah, that's
exactly all
you need to know.
Yeah,
they couldn't
it's
put
not
it
about,
any more
it's
plainly.
It's not whether or not it's true. It's about whether or not it would cause somebody to hate somebody. So literally, that means any insult. If you say to somebody, "You're kind of a dick," then you could technically be arrested for that if you think about it closely enough. You know, I mean,
right.
Somebody else might have heard that and they might think that person is a dick, and then that's hate. Go to prison. Boom. I mean, it's insane here in Canada. That's why, especially when it comes to issues like the Holocaust, I really hope that, you know, our American hosts will, you know, discuss that, not like it's something that everybody already knows about, you know, because there's a lot of places that are pushing for. They're pushing for it now in Greece, I think, to, you know, have, you know, questioning the Holocaust turned into a full-fledged crime, and a lot of people are actively losing their right to question this historical event, and I hope that people continue to speak out about it. You know, I feel really ashamed of what happened to Ernst Zundel, you know, and I personally came to know about his case through the mainstream media, because at the time I wasn't racially aware, and I wasn't really aware of anything. I was just a leftist, as they call them up here in Canada, which is to say, you know, a Democrat or a left winger, you know. And so, I mean, I read some articles, and I'm like, this guy must be a Nazi evil asshole. You know, of course, they publish pictures of him where he's turning his head. They pick a perfect picture to put when they're trying to demonize somebody. You know, you can take a picture of somebody, you know, when they're bending over to tie their shoelaces and they look up, and, you know, you could just, you know, take a million pictures and then pick the one where the person has this, that has a weird look on their face, you know, and then that will shape people's opinion when it comes to the rest of the article. But I think it's probably the Zundel case. And because after I'd read about, you know, the legal shenanigans that he'd gone through here, I watched the video online of him being interviewed by an Israeli reporter, and I just, my jaw dropped. It changed, well, I think it might have had a lot to do with me becoming aware, if you want to put it that way. Yeah. Anyway, so that's that. I mean, that's a huge blow for freedom of speech here in Canada. It basically makes insulting someone illegal, potentially. You know, if you insult somebody who has the time and the wherewithal and the money and so on required to pursue it, you know. So it's a scary thing to see. And
it's just another problem that we have here in Canada. I'd like to play you guys a quick clip that relates to the Parti Québécois charter that I was telling you guys about in my last two broadcasts. It's pretty quick, but it's definitely vomit-inducing. Try to keep your lunch or your dinner down for this one. I'll be back in a few minutes here.
To precise what will be the rules for living together in Quebec, and I think we will not divide the population, but contrary, we will nous unirons la population du Québec under this chart.
It wasn't easy for her because it had just been translated from the German, obviously. Yes, easy to live together if everybody looks the same, apparently. I mean, come on, lady, we know what you're playing at here. We know what you're playing at. It's an attempt to, I suppose, to appeal to a low common denominator of people who may support you. That's not going to win you an election. You want an irony here? I'll give you a great irony. If you hadn't been so anti-Catholic the past 30 years, you wouldn't have aborted yourself out of ever having the chance to actually win a referendum. Ariel Roth is a current affairs analyst from Montreal?
From Montreal.
Jewish?
I'm Jewish.
Well, how dare you live in Montreal? But I mean, seriously though, English, Jewish, non-French Canadian Quebecers have hemorrhaged over the years. But those who've remained, they've attempted to learn French, to be part of Quebec culture. They're now being told, well, if you're religious too, you don't really belong.
Exactly. As a religious minority whose grandfather was persecuted when he was hired as the first Jewish doctor in a French-Canadian Catholic hospital in the 1930s, I find this so amazing. It's how Quebec has come so full circle from the dominance of the Catholic Church in Quebec until the Quiet Revolution, and now to what is essentially the rise of a church of secularism.
Yeah, yeah. And because the Catholic Church, and God bless it, is opposing this. So it's absolutely unacceptable. And it's fascinating how, when you look at some of the traditions of the Quebecois people, there's been a certain suspicion of outsiders. You can see this in France, Huguenots, French Protestants, Jews, Anglo-Saxon powers. But this is something different. This is saying we all have to be the same people. Not that we're not sure about you, but we all have to be the same. What would happen if a doctor wore a yarmulke in a hospital, in a public hospital? Would they be allowed to work? Would they be allowed to perform heart surgery on a Quebecois premier, do you think?
Well, that's the question, and this is why it's so troubling. My father happens to be a physician at the Montreal General Hospital, and this is just going to drive out the best and the brightest, which Quebec has been doing for decades already.
Yeah.
Quebec is a province that's been decline for decades, and this is just a distraction for Quebec's deep-seated social and economic problems.
Yeah.
And that's what Marois is trying to do. She's trying to turn this into a wedge issue to distract from the best and the brightest moving out of the province and Quebec's incredibly high rates of unemployment.
Mm. I think that's true. There are those people, I've heard from them, who've said, oh, this is wonderful. At last, someone's standing up to radical Islam. But I don't think that's the issue here. I too, have huge problems with women who totally cover themselves. That's not Islamic, it's tribal. And that's a challenge in France and Holland and Scandinavia. It's not a major issue in Quebec. This is not about that. It's about something else. Forgive me if it's too personal, but does your dad, is he Orthodox? Does he wear a yarmulke?
He does wear a yarmulke.
Would he be allowed to in a hospital?
No, that's the thing. These are just leaked proposals, and we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
It's just very deeply troubling and very inconsistent with our Canadian values. You know, Marois, she has a disdain for the Charter of Rights and Freedom. She has a disdain for freedom of religion. And this is just another one of her silly attempts to isolate Quebec and to cater to the, as you said, the lowest common denominator and Quebec's and Quebec's deep insecurity.
Yeah. It's not really inconsistent. It's contrary to.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely contrary to Canadian values. We go on maybe too much about Canadian values. They're Western values. They're the best of Western democracy, tolerance for others. You don't have to like someone, but you tolerate, you coexist. Pluralism is messy by its very definition and nature. But this is something else. What I said in the monologue, you didn't hear it, but is it possible that this is all a bigger game. She wants this to be a Quebec position, and when the Supreme Court or the Charter say, you can't do this, then she can say, look, it's the English again, you see, we have our own values and they reject us.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that, you know, the federal government has been silent on this issue.
Incredibly.
Yeah.
They won't say a word on it.
Right. And so, you know, you would think that if they're willing to champion freedom of religion in other parts of the world, why aren't they doing the same in our own country in relation to...
You know why. Because they still want to win seats in Quebec.
I think it's probably for that reason, but I think that there's another reason. I think that they know that Marois just wants to pick a fight with them, and they're just not going to take the bait.
Well, that's
It's like fighting with a five-year-old.
Yeah, but if that is the thinking, that is quite intelligent, because that's what she does want to do. And leave it to the lawyers and the Supreme Court to... I mean, I didn't think I'd ever be saying rah-rah for the Supreme Court, but they will turn this down. Emotionally, even beyond what happens legally, just the feeling. I mean, I don't know what... I like to feel that I belong somewhere. This is my home, not just where I live. It's my home. How can you, as a Sikh or as an Orthodox Jew, even a non-Orthodox Jew, knowing that some of the people you know will not be welcome here, surely wouldn't you just feel, even though you may be third, fourth generation, it's time to move?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that's been the trend for decades now. Quebec used to have a very vibrant, extremely vibrant Jewish community.
Still
and it's still
it's
there.
So
it's still there. And actually, Quebec's had to rely so much on immigration to combat lagging birth rates.
Mm.
This is just going to further alienate.
Well, often from Central Africa, where people,
exactly.
People are devoutly Catholic or devoutly Muslim. And I would like to see every Catholic wear a very large, ostentatious, to use her phrase, crucifix, which they normally wouldn't wear, and to go along the street saying, look, what are you going to do now? I think that's what we should do and see what happens.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that all Quebecers should stand up for inclusiveness and liberty, values that are just so important in what is a tolerant society.
Liberty, fraternity, egality. Where did we hear that? That was in French, wasn't it? It was terrific. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, sorry. I was just puking there. So anyways, guys, that's a debate. The issues that they bond to people who feel the exact same way about it. So you've got, I mean, he starts off right away, you know, after the Quebec MP there says that she's going to bring Quebec together with this bill. Right away, that one pundit there, the guy who was doing the interview, says, oh, she had some trouble there because she was translating it from German. Oh, so funny. Yeah, so it starts it off with a racist remark towards Germans. That's a great segue into the rest of the bullshit, you know. And then this Jewess that they have on there says that, oh, they're driving away Quebec's best and brightest. Oh, so that happens to be you? So you Jews represent Quebec's best and brightest, right? Okay. And then also, you know, we have, she's talking about it is about how Jews have been prosecuted by, you know, they're persecuted by this. Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. It's like, who fucking cares? I don't care what's wrong with. Look, okay, guys, I'll let you in on something here, okay? I do have some French blood in me, okay? And I live close enough to Quebec that I've been there a few times. And, generally speaking, the people, when they see that I speak English, they're totally fine to speak English with me, and they're happy to speak English with me, okay? Yeah, you're going to encounter the odd asshole, and there's a myriad of reasons why people in Quebec would treat, you know, English people like shit, you know, dating back to the fact that, you know, Quebec and other parts of Canada were a French colony before the Brits came here. But I will be treated like shit by somebody. Let's say I walk into a shop where the owner is a French asshole, okay? I walk in and start speaking to him in English, and then some French guy from Papua New Guinea, some black guy from Papua New Guinea walks in and starts speaking in French. The guy is going to treat him better than he's going to treat me, even though we share the same blood, because this guy is using the same language. You know, the French have
exported their language when in their colonization efforts. So you got a whole lot of black areas where, you know, the black people do speak French, but you know, that doesn't make them French. They just use that, you know, they just because it's the language they use, it just boggles my mind, you know. Some people in Quebec, you know, they just don't get it. It's like, we should unite based on race, based on our whiteness, not based on the language that we speak, because then you're just going to end up getting all these, you know, Negroids from these places that, you know, the French Empire colonized back in the day. But then she goes on to talk about our Canadian, like how this legislation is destroying our Canadian values. It's like she's outside at one point, and then she's talking like, you know, she has some insight on these values because they're hers. It's like whatever she needs to be, it just defines Judaism right there, you know, and Jews in general, you know, whatever they need to be in any given situation to reap some sort of benefit, then that's what they'll be, you know. It's disgusting, you know. And then they also talked about relying on immigration. Yeah, well, they, you know, Quebec wouldn't have to rely on immigration if, you know, there were incentives for, you know, people living here to have babies, you know, if they weren't, you know, it's the same sort of deal that's going on in the States, you know. And then again, at the end, you know, they call on Christians to start wearing big crosses to like show, oh, you know, we all have symbols that we wear to show our religion. You know what I mean? So now they want Christians to walk around with these big, stupid-looking wooden crosses on them to show, look, it persecutes Christians too. Your average Christian doesn't give a shit. They're happy about this legislation because they don't want all these laundry heads and coaster heads, you know, working in the civil service, taking all these good jobs that you know, white people, you know, should get, Canadians should get. Anyway, it's absolute freaking insanity. You still there, James?
Yeah, am I unmuted?
Yeah, you're unmuted. You've been unmuted since the clip ended there. But
okay, yeah, anything it's interesting to hear your perspective on it. I met a French-Canadian guy from Quebec last year, and he's interesting because I believe his dad is from Guatemala and his mom is French Canadian, and his dad married her, you know, had him, and then the guy that I know married a gal down here in Wisconsin, which is damn near Canada. So he's down here on a green card, but he's a pretty good dude, you know. I get along with him, and he's naive in some respects, but I will say that he was telling Jew jokes the first time I met him. So,
hey,
you know, I have a
sounds like a good guy. that's a way to win my heart.
I've had other friends that were of pretty immediate French Canadian descent, and they were some of the best folks I've ever known. So I do have respect
man.
For those
like,
folks.
Ethel there in the chat, he's I think he did a wildcard show too at one point, but he's full on Quebecer. I'd love to. I told him, you know, I would love to do a show together with him about these issues, but he keeps telling me he's going to need to plan ahead so he doesn't drink too much. Let's see. We got another caller here on the line. Or, no, I guess they dropped. Sorry, whoever the caller was, I was just waiting for us to get back from that clip. If you want to call back in, you're more than welcome to. But, yeah, this charter is big news up here, man. It's a lot of people are watching it, you know, and not for the reasons that they're stating. They're stating, oh, people are watching it because it's oppressive and they want to make sure that, you know, these people – no, people want to see if somebody can actually stand up to these people and say, nope, you're not wearing that here. You know, you're not bringing that into the workplace here. It's bad enough that we have to give you these really good jobs. You're not going to be, you know, wearing your laundry or a coaster on your head. Okay, hey, we actually got a... Sorry, go ahead, man.
I was just going to ask quick, what was the source of that clip? Was it the CBC or?
It was CTV, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, CBC, no, it wasn't. It definitely, oh, sorry, it was a Sun. I guess I always thought the Sun was just a written publication, but I guess they have a news show now. So that was from a Sun news broadcast. I think we have
the UK.
It's Canadian. All Canadian major cities in Canada have a Sun as well. It's like a rag newspaper for immigrants and people who can't read very well. We have Ethel on the line right now, actually. I'm just going to bring him up if you don't mind. Ethel, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Oh, one city doesn't have a Sun right now. Montreal.
They've got La Droite. The right.
No, La Droite is Ottawa.
Okay.
The right is Ottawa. We have La Presse, the press, or Go Fast, Le Devoir.
Okay.
You have two. And Le Journal de Montréal. This is our son. That's the Montreal Journal.
Le Journal à Montréal.
Yeah, with a murder on the front page every day.
Yeah. Hey, Ethel, how are, like, what's, are people watching that legislation pretty closely in Montreal as well, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I think they are playing it because they are really able to separate people in two with it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they really do know how to control the debate with this, you know?
Yeah, as always. as of the last 2,000 years, as I say. It's always the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, I've noticed that, you know, not just Quebec, but with France also, that, like, they've always been very multicultural for some reason, so.
Yeah, but even the French-Canadian, that's something by studying my roots, we are a mix of cultures coming from France, but they had nothing to do with each other. As a Norman has nothing to do with a Southerner. They come from completely different backgrounds. But here they had to go together and then by region, and then the regions mix after.
That's interesting. Hey, I never knew this, but did you know that, like, the entire Cajun population, they were exiles from Quebec, apparently. So, like, that whole French Creole going on down in the States, actually, from France, but from Quebec.
I read it, but exiles, usually, you have to take it with a grain of salt. What I'm seeing is that the history has been rewritten for Acadia. For Acadia, the settlers were all, almost all, they were soldiers. They settled. After three generations, they just said that, it's not the crown of France, the boss is the crown of England. And they offered the land to loyalists, and the loyalists came with the money. So they bought the lands exactly as they do with Palestinians right now. It's not, you don't have the army bombarding everyone. They're just buying the land.
Hmm. Maybe, Ethel, could you take 2 seconds and explain to people what an Acadian is? I think maybe a lot of people don't know what Acadian is.
Yeah, right now it would be Nova Scotia.
A French person from Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a fourth of my line went there, so... When,
I think I have some roots there.
They came to other places. They went to other places where the lands were less expensive, like Louisiana, around Montreal, or L'Île d'Orléans, beside Quebec. But there were no armed deportation. That's not even how it was called 50 years after the event. It was... the great upheaval or derangement, just like the moving out.
Yeah, I'd heard recently, I forget where, but that...
you lose your neighbor.
Sorry, go ahead, Ethel.
Yeah, when the more neighbors move, the more the ones who stay are alone, and they were not into speaking English either. So it was either they assimilate or they move to go to a cousin who was living near Quebec or was going Louisiana, who was still either Indian or French. It's hard to say. Anyway, there were never a lot of French people here, aside from the ones who were born here, because the families were.
Well, hey, I just heard recently, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but that the rebels in the States, you know, before they, you know, when they were start fighting the Brits, that they actually sought, you know, the help of the Quebecers because they wanted to create a northern front. You know, so they were trying to ally with the Quebec against the Brits. That would have been interesting. But that Benjamin Franklin and apparently some big names went up to Quebec City to try to win over the ruling class there, try to get them on their side fight against the Brits.
If you listen, I think this was part two. Most of it was written in advance, and the big names, you don't see them in the documents usually, or papers, or letters sent to papers. And the biggest is Washington, who was a high official, high officer, and at 22, the one who started the first World War, which was the 7 Years War. That's how it was called. And to be a
patriarch,
he had to be a very high noble. If he's a very high noble, his allegiance goes to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
If he's president after that, you cannot cut your allegiance. You can play another character, but you cannot cut the allegiance of this character.
Mm-hmm. When Washington was president,
the War of Independence was won by the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States were more free before the war than after. And then
Jim was saying that not too long ago when he called into my show.
The liberties of the French.
Yeah, not a lot of people know this, but Quebec City is way, 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 way older than any English-speaking than any English, any British established city in Canada. It's medieval almost, you know. It's been here the French have been here a long, long time. So it's not that hard to understand why some of them are kind of pissed off when they see that their, you know, culture is getting muscled out. And it's very, very popular to bash Quebec and to bash the French-speaking people here. But it's part of their culture, and it's important. I just wish that it wasn't the sole factor, because I see all of these non-whites that come in here that happen to be from another place that was colonized, and they get preferential treatment over non-French-speaking whites here. And It's a lot of people just don't get that, you know what I mean? Try to talk to some people about that, and they just look at you like, eh?
Most people know little about the history, I do. Anyway, and they listen to media. In media, when they stick to, I don't know if you heard of the Patriots, the rebellions of 1837 and
39. I had heard of it, but I don't... I called him about it.
Yeah, me. I was surprised to see that there was rebellions at the same time in Ontario, which was Canada then.
Well, weren't they trying to force? They were trying to make it illegal to speak French in the workplace in Ontario, I think, and it sparked a big, created a huge. A huge rift between the French and the English. You know, everything seemed to be fine before that, but, well, not fine, but, anyways, guys, it looks like we got a bit of a round table here. James, do you mind if I let you go, man? I appreciate you calling in, man. I hope you do it. You should do another round table, you know, another wildcard show or something.
Yeah, anyways, I did do one last year at the end of February. I forget which date it was, but...
No, I was calling on you to do another one when I did my first, so... anyways, man, it was nice talking to you. Maybe I'll run in the round table or something like that, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right. Take it easy, man. Effel, I'm just going to take another call here. Do you mind?
Oh, no. You can call
me. Okay, Francois?
Francois, yeah.
Okay. So we have an 858 number here. 858, who are you? Where are you calling from?
What's up? This is PJ, Electric Menace on the Alternative Social.
Hey, PJ, what's going on?
You know, I missed most of the call because I was up here in my multicultural hellhole called D.C. doing my laundry in a cesspool. So I just want you Canadians to know, you know, you really need to hold your ground because you let that shit come to you guys. It's not going to be fun. And that's
it's already here, brother. It's already here.
And the next thing I'm going to tell you is, you know, I deal with this kind of shit all the time. I see the French-speaking, you know, whatever the hell they are. And, you know, I moved out of the ghetto to the suburbs, and, you know, I pay a little bit more money, but I still see them pulling each other out of their cars and fighting and, you know, it's just disgusting, really.
What do you say? Like, there's a French-speaking quarter where you live, or in
yeah,
Canada?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I left from the Negroes, American Negroes, to the African Negroes in my neighborhood that I moved into, and these guys, you know, they're like insane. And
that's
who knows
not
what
even
the hell
real
they're
French.
Saying.
You know, they're speaking some sort of Africanoid.
No, they're Ethiopians and they're French speaking. I know some French words from my good white privilege upbringing. You know what I mean? But I mean it's a big joke.
But you
really
had a very privileged upbringing.
Oh yeah,
all
so
of us
privileged.
White people did. You know, we were all born with a silver spoon in our mouth because we're white.
No, that's true. So I see a guy pull another guy out of a car and start beating him. Like, this is 9:30 at night. No cops are around, nothing. You know what I mean? And then
people
freak out on me.
Because, do you know why they were fighting? Or?
I don't know why these people do what the hell they do, but the guy pulled him out of a BMW, like, everybody in there. It's like in between two of their little restaurants. And they were all, you know, ooga boogieing and shit. And I was like, you know, I'm walking by, and I'm just trying to walk by, and these guys just don't fucking give a shit. They're like savages, man.
Yeah. And it's not something where we need to avoid it happening up here, man. It's a nightmare up here in Canada, too, man. We're fighting it on all fronts, you know. It's not peach and cream, man. It's a tossed groid salad at like BC, which is one of the most beautiful provinces that we have, is literally like Asia now. It's China.
Yeah, I went to a couple of Canadian places. Now that I'm a felon, I'm not going to be allowed into that country. But I went there when I was a kid. It was a beautiful place.
Well, thanks, man.
I'm 40, by the way. So it was a long time ago.
You know, as bad as the you know, all the proxy problems are in both of our countries. We need to understand that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're from America, Canada, South Africa, Europe, New Zealand, Australia, we're all brothers. You know, and we need to.
Well, have you seen Have you seen that video where the Israelis were so sick of the Africans going into their country that they were making vigils in the street, and they're screaming how they need a homogenous country, and they're fucking saying everything that we say. So
exactly.
How is it that they're allowed to do it? It's insane. And then everybody we know is a fucking pussy.
Oy vey, you can try to say we can do whatever we want to do. Oy vey.
Yeah,
you're totally right.
I guess
and,
so.
You know, they seem to feel like, you know, they can be as tribal as they want to be, but when you got a country like Quebec where they just say, we don't want people wearing religious symbols, then it's like, oh, you're hemorrhaging, you know, the best and brightest, leaving the country.
I tuned into that tripe of a conversation. I didn't even think I had the right phone number when I called in. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Thank God you came back.
Yeah, I got it.
Others. You know, I just wanted to call in because I'm going to make it my duty to support the network.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for calling again.
All right, skinhead.
Work. Take it easy. I mean, shit. Did I just...
Oy,
14
oy
years, brother. 14
oy
years.
Oy.
Bye-bye. All right. Effel, do you mind if I take this... Effel just dropped as well. If you wanted to call back in, you can. We got about 15 left right now. I'm going to pick up a 608. 608, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is James. I called back to listen, but...
Everyone else dropped out, man. So.
I missed the first part of that was Electric Menace there.
Yeah, yeah.
I missed the first part of his call.
You know, he was saying that in D.C. There's a lot of French-speaking Ethiopians, I think he said, and that they just get into brawls on the streets for no reason that he could understand anyway. But...
yeah.
An interesting guy, well, man. A tattoo artist from D.C. in the middle of the jungle, you know.
Well, and that's why I appreciate him calling in, because people like me need to hear his stories or haven't heard his stories, because I've been raised and lived around basically 100 to, you know, 100% white people, 99.99% white people my whole life, except for the few years I lived in a larger city where there was segregated neighborhoods, basically, and all the liberals complained about that, like, oh, we're so segregated here. Where I'm from, like, a lot of kids, young people growing up in these white communities just don't have a concept of what goes on in the larger urban areas.
No. They say they want diversity until they get it, and then they understand what they've got, you know, and
exactly.
And you cannot live with these people, you know. And that's not to say, you know, you get maybe the odd family here or there spread out, you know what I mean, like in some smaller communities and stuff. And they're genuinely people who are, like, attempting anyway to integrate, you know, and who are generally responsible, take care of their property and their family, and, you know, don't let their surroundings go to shit. And they're trying, you know what I mean? And I'll give them that. But it's when you get them in numbers, you know. It's like they feed off one another's laziness and violence, and it's like a disease almost, you know, like a groid disease. But I don't know. It really, it's upsetting. But yeah, he was relaying a story on when he called in the other day about how these he told these this black customer at his tattoo parlor, I guess, was chimping out, and he told him that he was acting like a monkey.
Right.
And he lost it and just went through the roof, but he was talking about he was trying to basically provoke this guy, and he wouldn't do anything, you know, and he would scream and holler and cause a big scene, but he wouldn't do anything, you know.
Yeah,
so that's the one thing that I've learned in my experience is that, you know, these groid thugs are very tough when they're in a large group, but when they're by themselves, they generally don't do anything, you know, unless, you know, you're talking about footage from like a quickie or something like that, where they're hard up for their money at 4 a.m. or whatever, and then you might see some violence. But generally speaking, they prefer to do that stuff in packs, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I can honestly say that my biggest multicultural experience was in a county jail where I was an obvious minority.
A lot
of folks from Chicago, and by folks I mean folks as in the gang.
Yeah, probably they knew each other and shit too.
Absolutely.
Do you mind if I ask what you were in there for?
It was a nonviolent offense, controlled substance related.
That's the one thing that I've heard time and time again is that, you know, they put people into that system for something like marijuana possession or something like that, and the people come out, you know, way, way, way worse than they went in, you know, usually because I think it has something to do with the screening for drugs. But it didn't so much, I guess, apply to you if you weren't in there for a long time, but that... part of your condition for parole is to take drug tests, and that marijuana tends to stay in your system a hell of a lot longer than something like, I guess, crack or cocaine. So you get a lot of guys going into prison as potheads, and they come out crackheads. It's like, way to rehabilitate them.
Yeah. Mm. And it actually, it depends on how fat you are as to how fast THC moves through your system.
That's right. It's stored in the fat cells. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not an environment for rehabilitation whatsoever. I mean, I guess you can go to libraries and get a degree of some sort in a federal prison, and not that a degree is, you know, anything to be proud of in this system, but at least there's some opportunities in the larger prison system, but that it's just a complete fucking joke. And all you do, you go there, you meet dealers, you learn how to be a thug if you want to learn anything.
I think criminals call prison crime college, you know? That's where they go to plan their heist, to figure out what they did wrong, you know? And for every one guy that goes in there that actually wants to turn himself around and that follows the rules and doesn't get into fights and wants to get a degree and stuff like that, you've got, you know, probably over 100 guys that are lifers, and that the first thing they do is when they see someone trying to do stuff like that, they want to fuck that up. You know, that they don't want to see people getting out and bettering themselves. They want you in there with them forever. You know what I mean? They want you to be their bitch. And they don't care if they get into a fight, if they get caught shanking somebody and stuff. They know they're in there for life, you know. So to throw people in general population for, you know, possession is fucking ludicrous. But, yeah. Anyways, man, I did want to talk a little bit today about the Heritage Front, but I don't think I'm going to get a chance to. Maybe I could touch on it really quick, but the Heritage Front was a Canadian white nationalist organization. It was founded in 1989, disbanded around 2005. So it maintained a telephone message line, and the voice to the hotline was Gary Shipper, and there's a different editorial read on this phone line each day. It resulted in complaints from the Canadian Human Rights Commission. Remember that group that I told you that said truth is no defense? And also hearings into allegations that the group violated Canada's hate crime laws. Well, what doesn't violate Canada's hate crime laws these days, right? Apparently, every time you insult somebody, you're committing a hate crime. So the group organized a series of white power rock concerts in Toronto and elsewhere. And immediately after one of these concerts, some Tamil guy, a guy from Tamil, I don't know if you heard of the Tamil Tigers or not, but he was badly beaten. Okay, so, and that's, I don't know why they make that out to be this huge thing. You know, they didn't even figure out who did it. It's just, oh, he was in the area where there was this concert, so I guess let's blame it on this heritage front. But it was started, or one of the founding members anyway, it was guy Wolfgang Drogue. I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, but he was a German-born Canadian. He was the founding leader of the Heritage Front, and he right through from the 70s to the 2000s, he was actively involved in white nationalism. He ended up getting killed. He ended up getting shot, actually. I have the article right here. Of course, they start off the article calling him a white supremacist neo-Nazi who'd been shot dead in a suburban Toronto apartment. Reports say Wolfgang Drogue was found dead after police responded to complaints of gunshots at a Scarborough apartment building Wednesday afternoon. When they arrived, they found a man with gunshot wounds in the hall of the building and a suspect barricaded inside his apartment. Police negotiated with the man for an hour before arresting him. No hostages were involved in the standoff, but a school nearby was locked down for safety. Police gave no information about the victim or the shooter or the relationship between them, but apparently it had something to do with drugs, but who knows if that's the truth. The point is, we have a guy here who is trying to, who had an organization called the Heritage Fund here in Canada. He actually brought in Tom Metzger and his son, I believe, to speak here in Canada at a speech by David Irving, and I guess he ended up getting into a bunch of trouble for that, along with the Metzgers also, I guess, got detained at the border there. But anyway, I do want to talk a little bit more about the Heritage Front, nationalist groups in Canada in general. And then actually something that Bill Rise brought up when he called into Siegfried's show there with Cobb got me thinking, about the differences between Church of the Creator and Odinism or paganism and, astrotheology, these different religions that tend to appeal to our people. And so I wanted to read a few introductions to those different religions so we could just get a little taste for what each of them is about. And, I don't know how many people out there are interested in this sort of thing, but, I mean, it's not to say you need to choose a religion to be a complete person. I don't subscribe to that thinking necessarily, but I do like to know what these what they're about, Yeah, so we only got about 3 minutes left in the broadcast here. James, you got anything else you want to mention? Or?
Well, if you're going to continue reading, I'll just listen.
No, it's pretty long. Time to finish it all today, but I've got it saved here in notes, and if I get a chance to, definitely read. I've got a reading on Matt Hale, and I've got his interview with Fox uploaded. I was really impressed. I hadn't heard that, actually, until just the other day, so I wanted to play that, too. But it's going to have to wait. I do have to jump off at 10 here. So, anyways,
all right,
man.
Well, thanks for the show.
Hey, I appreciate you calling in, James. I hope you do another wild card, and if not, maybe I'll bump into you on a round table or something like that.
All right, thanks. Yeah, I'll be working on some writing. We'll see what happens.
Good stuff, man. All right.
Have a good night.
1488. You too. Take it easy.
Take care, everyone.
All right, guys. Yeah, so again, this has been the Great White North on the one and only Renegade Broadcasting, renegadebroadcasting.com, nationalprotectionism.com for the manifesto, Renegade Tribune for the articles and the insight, and Alternative Social for Social Network. Again, this is Andrew, the Great White North broadcast, and we're going to go out with a track by Asenblut. This is Von Worten und Taten. Have a good night. Talk to you soon.